sexy guy.
Hour number three, 3D. Yes. That music means it's Tim Hasselbeck time. Yes. Joins us every Wednesday at this time. Tim, what's going on?
How are you guys?
Well, obviously, it's been a different week of shows, as you can imagine. Things happened right before we took to the airwaves. About an hour is when it really hit. 45 minutes to an hour before we hit the airwaves on Monday. And, of course, Monday's show got scrapped and turned into that for 4 hours, and it's been that way ever since. So that's the local perspective. What was the national perspective?
I think the national perspective was that there was an expectation after the way that the New England game went. I think it was like during the New England game. You know, I watched the game with Schefter and Chris Mortensen and stuff, and you know, I think I heard one of them at one point said, you know what, we need to keep an eye on this Tennessee situation. And so I think the feeling was that even though, you know, there was that vote of confidence after the Kansas City game, it didn't seem like it was ironclad.
It was very clear to me, and we've talked about it a lot this week, that John Robinson was separating himself. Because I talked about it all season. The fans, they were, the offense sputtered all season. And even when they were 8-4, I mean, fans were, most of it was directed at Terry Robiskie, the OC. And I kept saying, well, you can get rid of the OC all you want, but it's Mike Mularkey's system. This is what he wants. So, okay, exit Terry Robiskie. The next guy, it's still what Mike Mularkey wants to do. It's very clear that the general manager, in my opinion, was wanting to distance himself from Exotic Smash Mouth in the press conference on Monday. He was basically, to me, saying, okay, I'm not on board moving forward with Exotic Smash Mouth. I want something different.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily just his frustration with, you know, whatever. You just say Exotic Smash Mouth. I think that I think he's just looking around. Here's my take on it, right? Kind of bit of a whimper at the end of the season in terms of how the team finishes, okay? There's obviously no vote of confidence anywhere throughout there, even though rumors are swirling like crazy. Then an upset in a postseason game, and, you know, Mike Mularkey addresses kind of the situation with the rumors, and so now it forced the hand of – you know, the, you know, ownership to basically, you know, make some kind of comment so that you just don't appear absolutely ruthless. And so what you do is you say, like, hey, listen, you know, we made the postseason. They won a game. We'd like them back as our coach. But really, truthfully, I don't know that anything ever changed. And, you know, I just get the sense that, you know, whether it was the Josh McDaniels rumors or the fact that, you know, Mike Vrabel's, you know, now rumored to, or not rumored, but he's going to interview for the job, that, you know, John Robinson wants kind of a New England type setup here. And that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's what he's comfortable with. And I think it makes even more sense when you look at how the game against New England went. So I think that's just how we got to this point, and I think that, you know, the voter's confidence was, you know, was just misleading. I mean, just plain and simple.
Well, look, everybody wants the New England way. I wouldn't, you know, frown upon anybody wanting to be the New England way, but
nationally, everyone thought Josh McDaniels was getting this job, and then when the Titans made the playoffs, what happened was that these teams that had bye weeks or were out of it could go ahead and, you know, those the guys that had bye weeks could go interview. And the openings that were out there, so whether it was the Giants and Detroit and the Colts and all these places, they could start interviewing. The Titans couldn't. And so I think what happened is Josh McDaniels got pretty far down the road with both the Giants and the Colts before there was ever an opening. I mean, that's what I think happened.
Well, like I said, I don't have a problem, Tim, if you want it to look like New England. But, you know, New England had Jacoby Brissett and Jimmy G as the backups to Tom Brady. Before that, they had Matt Castle when Tom Brady went down. And that was a long time ago. And Matt Castle, much, much, much younger Matt Castle. Well, if you want it to look like New England, then make it look like New England. They don't have a backup quarterback. Your quarterback, when he runs, is going to get hurt. It's proven. Mariota in 3 years gets hurt. Then have a capable backup. That's on John Robinson. New England also has a carousel, as you know, of running backs. I mean, they've got the big bruiser, whether it's LeGarrette Blount or Corey Dillon, the big guy, and then they got all these scat backs and Lewis and White, Kevin Faulk over the years, all these guys that do these other things, Rex Burkhead, Brandon Bolden. You know, they keep all these guys that they just rotate in and out. You know, Titans went in that game. They had two active running backs in the game. David Flewellen and Derrick Henry. Well, that's fine. Then make it look like New England. Then assemble it like New England goes about their business. And the Titans aren't set up for that.
Right. But you can't change your roster, you know, completely in 2 years. I mean, you just look at some of the struggles that, I mean, just take Bill O'Brien. Let's take the idea of making New England happen somewhere else, right? So Bill O'Brien goes to Houston Texans. He basically just, you know, rebuilds his staff down there of guys that, you know, had been in New England or, you know, some type of tie or connection to there. And so, you know, that's why Romeo Crennel's there and Mike Vrabel. And, you know, you look at what they're doing offensively. It looks very much like New England at times. But, look, they didn't have the quarterback either. And so, you have to try to figure it out until you can get the quarterback. Well, then it looks like they get the whole quarterback. Well, he gets hurt. Well, they don't have Jacoby Brissett and Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, as backups in Houston either. And you look at their running back situation. You know, Alfred Blue isn't Deion Lewis. I mean, they're trying. You know, they're trying to recreate it.
Right, but their GM is out. But their GM got he's out. Right?
Well, right. Yes, and that's the other aspect of it is the GM wasn't a New England guy. The head coach was a New England guy, and so now, you know, the head coach wants a New England guy as the new GM. I mean, that's, you know, kind of how it's worked out. I guess the point I'm making is that, you know, part of the New England way is having New England personnel, and which I think is what you're saying. And look, not everyone gets that right. You know, in fact, most people don't get it right. So, look, I think when you are trying to kind of create that New England environment, I think there's other aspects of it that you're trying to do, which is, how you handle the media, what the expectation of the guys in your locker room is in terms of how they act and how they interact. And, I think that has a lot to do with it as well. So, I don't know. I just think that the idea that you're going to turn it over into looking exactly like New England immediately or within 2 years, I just don't think it can be done.
This is where I'm at, Tim. Mike Mularkey was a stand-up, noble guy, really, really good human being. I think the players loved playing for him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything that anybody could dispute with that right there. I don't think he was the greatest head coach. The more it went along, the more I started to question a lot of his moves. I didn't think he was the greatest head coach, but the bottom line is he took it from just the scrap heap, which Ken Whisenhunt left. You know, you've been on the show long. I mean, he just left a disaster at this place. I mean, he damn near crushed the franchise. That's how bad the Wizenator was in a season and a half. And he brought it back. And they just got beat in the divisional round of the playoffs. Whether you agree with his system or not, they did go 9-7 back-to-back years, and they just got to the second round of the playoffs. He's the first coach to get fired after winning a playoff game since 2002, Steve Mariucci. The point I'm making is I don't think he was great. I don't really even have a problem if that's what John Robinson, if he's got a different vision. But here's the deal, and this is what I've been saying all week. That's fine. But here's the deal, John Robinson, moving forward. Now you're on the clock. This is now your resume. So there's no more blaming the system for Marcus Mariota's growth or lack of. There's no more blaming Terry Rubisky. No more blaming Mike Mularkey. Now, John Robinson, it's on you to fix it. Because if the divisional round isn't good enough, this is your stain on your resume. And that's fine if he wants to sign up for that. But the blame is not going to go elsewhere anymore. Now it's going to the GM. And if he's cool with that, then everybody else should be cool with it. But those are pretty high standards for the next guy, that the divisional round of the playoffs isn't good enough in Nashville.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's hard to dispute what you're saying, but, like, I think the – I mean, again, if you want to just – I guess the national perspective of it, nobody thought the Titans were close. Nobody. And I think that –
Are you talking about Saturday night against New England?
I don't think anybody nationally thinks that the Titans were a legitimate contender.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay.
And maybe all those people are wrong, but I don't think anybody looks at the Tennessee Titans as a team that's like, ooh, they are so close, like divisional round and, like, you know, shore up a couple things and, like, a year from now, like, they're a legit contender. I don't think people feel that way. You know, you go back a couple years ago, you know, with the Colts, and, you know, they're playing in the NFC Championship game, and you look at them and you go, you know what? This isn't actually a very good team. They're kind of doing this because Andrew Luck's remarkable, and so, you know, maybe you add, you know, you get the Frank Gore type, and you maybe improve a little bit on defense, and then maybe you are a legit contender, you know, against the New England Patriots. I think that was the, you know, that was the general, you know, that was the feeling. I don't think people feel that way about the Titans. I mean, I'd be surprised if you thought they were, you know, just right there.
I didn't think they'd beat Kansas City. I didn't think they'd beat New England. I was way more wrong about this team all season, winning or losing. It was a very hard team for me to predict. Yeah, I mean, look, the stats were the stats. I mean, we said it all year. But late in the year, they had – you can't deny it. They had the easiest schedule in the NFL. I mean, that's winning percentages prove that out. And Jacksonville had the second easiest schedule in the NFL, and Jacksonville's in the AFC title game. I'm just saying, John Robinson has been heaped a lot of praise, and a lot by me, which he deserves. Okay, he's done a really good job. But now that he's done this, now it's going to be up to him to fix this thing, and nobody else is going to get the blame. It's going to be on him now. Because he's gotten praise and this love fest for 2 years. Now things are moving forward are going to be different.
Look, I would agree with that. I'm sure that he understands that, and that's how it should be. And look, if you're going to fire a coach that goes to the playoffs, you said last, you know, divisional round, first time that's happened since, you know, 2002. If you're going to do that, then, yeah, the guy that you hire better – you know, better be making the playoffs, better be, you know, improving the team. And so I think there's a lot of pressure in this hire for him. You know, I mean, I just, that's certainly the case. I don't know, and I'd be surprised. Like, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, as you said, the direction, and Terry Rubisky is the offensive coordinator. I mean, I think that that, I think that for a lot of people, they didn't feel like this was going to be an offense that was, you know, that was close because of that. And look, and Marcus's numbers weren't good this year. And so when you look at that, you say that has to improve. I mean, that's generally speaking, when guys get fired, is because the quarterback's not playing great. And, you know, I think that Marcus's numbers, you know, at least presented, you know, portrayed a picture that he wasn't improving. Well, I personally don't think that's the case. I think it's hard to, you know, state your case against that, you know, when his interception numbers are up and the touchdown numbers are down. I think it's hard to fight that perception.
Tim, of the names that are getting thrown out there, is there any one that jumps out at you as a person you're intrigued with that you think might be the best fit?
Well, I do think that Mike Vrabel is very interesting. You know, just his background, the fact that, you know, he gets promoted to defensive coordinator, you know, in Houston when Romeo Crennel had been the defensive coordinator there, but Romeo still stays on the staff. You know, I think, you know, not only has he had experience in, you know, New England, but, you know, he's had the experience in Houston. He's had the experience at Ohio State. And I think that, you know, when you just look at the guys that he's been around because of that, I think that makes him an intriguing candidate, especially when you think, you know, you would assume he and John Robinson would see personnel and, you know, kind of be in step with each other, which I think is really important when you just look at, you know, how you build your roster. So, you know, what he does offensively, though, is, you know, I think would end up being a pretty big question mark. I mean, who is his offensive coordinator? Because Mike Vrabel is not working with the offense. So
right.
Who does he hire as his offense coordinator, I think, ends up being critical.
Okay, so let me follow up with this. What is the most important thing? Don't you think sometimes teams get so caught up in, well, we've got a quarterback, and we've got to get the most out of the quarterback, so my head coach has to be an offensive guy, when it seems like the first priority for a head coach has to be just an overall leader, and who he brings in philosophically can then run the offense that you want to run. Do you think teams have made that mistake before in terms of, I got to go offense or I got to go defense based on the history, the recent history of my team?
Yeah, 100%, because I actually think in some ways you're better off hiring a defensive coach and then hiring a good offensive coordinator, because that offensive coordinator can spend every moment with this young quarterback that you need to play better and not have the responsibilities that the head coach has. I mean, look, Mike Zimmer is the head coach for the Vikings. He's a defensive guy. You know what he does? He turns the offense over. He turned it over to Norv Turner. Norv Turner got fired. He turned it over to Pat Shurmur. Pat Shurmur is playing the third-string quarterback, and they're in the NFC Championship game. Now, Pat's probably going to, you know, get a head job, but the reality is that, you know, he has the ability to just have to deal with being the offensive coordinator. So I think in some ways hiring Mike Vrabel, a defensive-minded guy, allows him to deal with the personnel and the special teams and the defense and do all the stuff that he needs to do as a head coach, and then hire a good offensive coordinator and say, listen, I'm turning this over to you, okay? You have the offense, and your job is to get this quarterback to play better. And that's how this is going to work. And so I don't think you have to look at it and say, you know what, we want the quarterback to play better. Let's find an offensive-minded guy to come here and be the head coach for the Tennessee Titans.
Tim, when we come back in the second segment, we're going to make you a consultant. We're going to pretend that John Robinson, maybe he's already done this, and we just don't know this. Maybe we'll get some scoop. But John Robinson brings you in and says, Tim, I want you to construct a philosophy, an offensive philosophy that will bring out the best and Marcus Mariota. We want to hear your answer when we come back.
It's a hell of a tease. You're going to want to come back and listen to Tim's answer. Tim Hasselbeck.
Are you praising my ability to tease, or is this just, you know, because Tim has got such a great football
mind? I think it's both. It's a good
okay,
tease,
good.
And I'm anxious to hear his answer. Tim Hasselbeck, brought to you every week by Penn Station East Coast Subs, locations in Mount Juliet, Hermitage, Bellevue, and two down in Murfreesboro. You're going to want to hear this. More of Tim Hasselbeck next on 3D. We'll pass along. Predators had practice. Ryan Johansson, who got hit late in the second period, did not play the rest of the game. Did skate this morning. Victor Arvidsson did not. Philip Forsberg, who's on IR, skated separate.
And Arvidsson apparently was with him.
So they skated separately, not with the team.
Right.
But that doesn't look good for Victor Arvidsson returning tomorrow night against Arizona.
Yeah, I think they want to be careful. Victor Arvidsson takes a beating in games.
He does. He really does. It's amazing how durable he's been,
yeah,
considering the beating that he takes.
So I think you take your time. You make sure. I'm sure he wants to play.
Yeah.
But that's very encouraging that Johansson was back out there participating.
No doubt. All right, we bring in Tim Hasselbeck. Set it up again, Willie, so we can hear Tim's answer.
All right, Tim Hasselbeck. I really enjoy Tim, by the way he breaks down on the television, different plays, key plays in a game, what are the pass routes being run, what are the blocking schemes that spring a running back. And so, Tim, if John Robinson brought you in as a consultant and just said, hey, I'm about to change coaches, going in a new direction on the offense, what is the best philosophy you would tell him how to construct an offense that would bring out the best in Marcus Mariota. Now, if people have not heard Tim throughout the year, there were a couple of times where, Tim, you talked about when they were struggling, some things that you guys were watching and saying, you know what, I don't know if – it seems like you guys had an inkling that this might be coming. So if you could start from scratch, what would you do?
Well, I think the first place that I would look in terms of trying to get the most out of Marcus is I would look at what Kansas City's done. And I know some people are going to be like, well, wait a minute, Kansas City, we just saw a game where Andy Reid called, whatever, 5 run plays in the second half. Like, how could it be Kansas City, you know? But the truth is, I think if you look at what Alex Smith has been able to accomplish at the position, doing the stuff that they've done in Kansas City, Marcus could do that and more. So he could be Alex Smith plus. And, you know, I think you look at the backs that they have there, you know, or have had there and the success that they've had, I think you could do that. Now, I don't know that that is necessarily, you know, totally a fit, you know, with, you know, kind of John Robinson's background. But me personally, when I watch Kansas City on offense, I feel like the Titans could be doing that and could be doing it, you know, just as well or better. I mean, guys, just think now, obviously, you just look at the current personnel. You know, they have Tyreek Hill. You know, you hope to get, you know, Corey Davis, you know, kind of to be a number one. They have Travis Kelce. Titans have Delanie Walker. You look at the backfield, you know, I mean, you know, they have Hunt. You know, you have Travis Henry. You know, you have, and just look at the quarterback situation. Like, to me, it's already a match, you know? And so I think you look at it that way, one of the first calls I would make, and I think it would surprise some people, and I think it's probably something that maybe wouldn't be all that exciting, but I would call Brad Childress, who is just retired, and said, look, you know, you were kind of just buried on that staff there doing special projects. If Mike Vrabel was the head coach, never having head coaching experience before, could you get Brad Childress to be the assistant head coach offensive coordinator? Guy's been a head coach, been a play caller, and his fingerprints are all over the creative stuff that they've done with Alex Smith in their run game and even in their passing game.
What would be the basic concepts, without trying to go over too many people's heads, especially on radio where you can't actually show us?
The offense. So West Coast offense, the main premise in the passing game is – getting the ball to guys on the move in space where you have catch and run out opportunities. And it doesn't always involve pushing the ball down the field, you know, through the air. It's a lot of times the ball coming out of the quarterback's hands quickly. A lot of it is progression read stuff, which in my opinion is the easiest way to attack things for a quarterback. Then you combine that with, and this is kind of where Brad's experience has come in. You combine that with, you know, kind of the more of the spread stuff that we're seeing. So, you know, just think about stuff Marcus did in college. You know, think about stuff that, you know, that a lot of these guys in college have done. So that's what they've kind of merged both of those things.
Right.
And so I think what you're going to see is, you know, you're seeing less I formation. You're seeing less, you know, just pack it in the box and run. You're seeing less, you know, 3 tight end groupings or 2 tight end groupings, and you're seeing more of a spread blended with the West Coast offense. So, you know, zone read stuff that you see the Titans do, you just see more of it, you know, in Kansas City. And then different kind of wrinkles off of that. They majored in that stuff. So I think that's probably the biggest difference that you would see. Whereas I think that, you know, for the Titans, this past year, there wasn't as much spread in their offense as there was in the Kansas City offense.
And Kansas City, as much as you might have an image of them in your mind right now, because the Titans beat them, they had the number one or one of the top 5 offenses easily in the league throughout the season. So some of that stuff that was working, that's for sure.
And I'll tell you something right now, everybody, and I mean everybody, was copying the stuff that Kansas City was doing early in the season. I mean, you just think about the little touch pass that Brady throws, the touchdown pass to James White in the game this past weekend. Like, that was something that you hadn't seen in the NFL until this year. and Kansas City ran it early in the year with DeAnthony Thomas. So, you know, remember the shovel passes that everybody was running out of these spread looks? They got that. That was Kansas City. Kansas City was running it, and then everyone started copying them. So, to me, look, Matt Nagy is the head coach for the Chicago Bears because people realized that what Kansas City was doing offensively seemed to be a step ahead of everyone else. And, you know, for whatever the reason, you know, they kind of had stretches where they didn't play great, and some of it was the quarterback, and some of it maybe have been, you know, just not calling enough runs. But I think people were generally impressed with what they were doing offensively.
It's interesting to hear you say those things and then trying to match up with what we heard from John Robinson. Of course, you're trying to sift through a 30-minute press conference, and most of it is cliches and basic stuff that's not going to get a lot of detail. But when you really tried to filter it down and try to get some substance, one thing that popped out at us was he said players evolve. He said at one time he felt like the personnel on the offense right now could play in a number of different schemes. But he was basically saying that players evolve. You have to sort of change with the times. You have to be sort of ahead of the curve. It sounds like he wants somebody that can really grasp on to what you're talking about, where people start imitating what you're doing rather than you're playing catch-up or doing something that worked for you 15 years ago.
Yeah, and, you know, we're all kind of making this connection, you know, because of the Mike Vrabel interview of, okay, you know, they want to do, you know, Patriots South, you know, and so if Mike Vrabel's the head coach, then – you know, is Sean Ryan the offensive coordinator? You know, Sean Ryan is the quarterback coach currently, the Texans, had been with the Giants. You know, and so he's kind of got the Kevin Gilbride experience, you know, as well as, you know, the Bill O'Brien experience in terms of his offensive background. Well, that's not spread, you know. I mean, some of the stuff they did this year with Deshaun Watson was, but, you know, so what, Sean Ryan has, whatever he played, 8 games under his belt of some of that spread offense stuff. You know, and so I don't know that that's necessarily the right connection to make just because the guys are on the same staff in Houston. You know, I think it ends up being interesting. I just know it's this. If Mike Vrabel's the next head coach, I don't think people should have a problem with that. But who he hires as his offensive coordinator is a really big deal. I mean, it's a really big deal. So, you know, I think you need to pay as much attention to that as you do, you know, who the head coach is.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with hiring a defensive-minded coach. Like you brought up Mike Zimmer. He's a defensive-minded coach. And those guys, you've got Mike Vrabel. You've got Jim Schwartz. You've got Steve Wilks. I mean, you've got guys out there that are being mentioned. I don't know if maybe Jim Schwartz, I just kind of threw that in there. But defensive-minded guys, defensive coordinators, they can be head coaches, but it's critical to find out, okay, who are they going to bring? Because a lot of this, as we know, is stemming around the offense and how it took a step back, and in particular the franchise quarterback. Year 3, he went the wrong way. So it's going to be critical if it is going to be a defensive coordinator, a defensive-minded coach. Okay, but who's your mastermind?
Listen, I'll give you a name right now. I'll give you a name right now of a guy that's out there, Todd Haley. Would you want Todd Haley as the offensive coordinator?
I don't know. You tell us, because he kind of comes off from afar as a whack job.
I was say it again.
I said he kind of comes off from afar as a whack job,
or at least a hothead, if nothing else.
Well, listen, he's definitely a hothead. I think at one point I was in a conversation with he and Kurt Warner, and I guess it would have been Tim Rattay at the time, and you know, everyone's kind of yelling at each other, and at one point he's like, I like confrontation, you know, I mean, he's a confrontational guy. But I will say that I was with the Cardinals when he was there, and they hadn't been good, and they became good. I thought he did a really nice job, and you know, he's not that far of a departure from, you know, this Belichick, you know, kind of Parcells tree, Todd Haley's a Parcells guy. And Mike Vrabel, by way of Bill Belichick, kind of falls under that same, you know, under that same tree. And it's hard to argue with some of the success that Todd Haley's had as a play caller. You know, you could argue his record as a head coach, but listen, Arizona is a play caller and Pittsburgh is a play caller. They've been pretty good. So, look, there's certainly a name that I think is, you know, is interesting. It's not a, you know, a spread, you know, a guy with spread experience, but it is a guy that I think is really creative on offense and gets the most out of his players. So,
who was his quarterback in KC? Was it Castle? Who was his quarterback?
I think he had Castle at one point there.
See, that's
yeah.
the only problem I have is, I mean, look at the quarterback. He's had Kurt Warner, Castle, and Roethlisberger. I mean, those are guys stay in the pocket, stand there, throw the ball. I mean, that's not what you're looking for out of Mariota. I mean, he's – look, I think he has to dial it back. I do. I think he needs to turn into more of a Russell Wilson, use his legs to just free him, give him more time.
You want to hire Darrell Bevell? He's available.
I don't know. I mean, what went
the
wrong there?
Seahawks coordinator, you know. So listen, I've been making the case for Brad Childress. Listen, Darrell Bevell is in the NFL because of Brad Childress. Darrell Bevell has, you know, plenty of coordinating experience. He's coached Russell Wilson for a while now, so a lot of the stuff that they do off, they've done offensively in Seattle. With Russell Wilson, you would think would fit with some of the stuff that Marcus should be good at. So, look, Darrell Bevell is available. He was an offense coordinator that just got fired. So, you know, he would be another good name if it was you were going to hire a defensive minded head coach.
Okay, let me ask you something, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but it seems like you keep going back to Mike Vrabel. There's a lot of guys out there. Do you know something we don't know, or is that just you've talked to people or you've been around him and you think it's just your opinion, you think he would be the best candidate? I've just noticed you keep gravitating more toward Mike Vrabel.
I was asked probably in different years about, you know, jobs have come up both at the college level and at the pro level, and people have asked me about somebody, and he's not somebody that I know personally, but he's somebody that, you know, I've heard a lot of good things about, and I've mentioned his name to people before, and I'm connecting the dots between. Let me put it this way: I think if the Titans don't make the postseason, Josh McDaniels is the head coach of the Tennessee Titans.
If they would have lost to Jacksonville, so they would have had to. They had that window available. They then could have jumped on McDaniels, but because they kept playing.
And I think that McDaniels, and I think that this would have been McDaniels' preferred job.
Okay, so why can't he change his – I mean, so things change. So now it's back on the table, or it's on the table.
I think it's already – because the Titans can't interview him.
Right, but you can still – you can send a text and say, hey, you know, and things go on behind the scenes.
You can't, but here's the thing, but you don't – but he's already way down the line.
Okay.
Let's just use the Colts as the example. He's way down the line with the Colts. I mean, way down the line. So, you know.
You're saying that's done.
It looks like it's over, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Adam Schefter's reporting that he's going to be the next head coach of the Colts. So, it's probably done.
Is that a good hire?
I mean, listen, you're taking a guy away from New England who's got head coaching experience, who's got play calling experience, and, you know, you're anticipating that you're going to have Andrew Luck back. You know, I can't say it's a terrible hire. You know, people think highly of him. So what I'm saying is I'm connecting the dots to Mike Vrabel based on the fact that I believe that Josh McDaniels was going to be the head coach of the Titans had the Titans had the ability to interview him when the Colts got in the picture.
You're saying this is going to be – it's going to have a New England feel, something from the tree, something from the nest, so to speak.
I believe that to be the case, yeah. I mean, you mentioned I mean, think about the names that are, you know, it's Steve Wilkes, who, you know, his name has kind of been out there, but, you know, I haven't heard a ton of, you know, heavy steam in terms of him getting the job. You know, it's a little bit like Brian Flores. You know, Brian Flores, a linebacker coach for the Patriots, you know, he's interviewed for the Cardinals job. I just don't know that, you know, I don't know that that's really – that's his job to get. I mean, it might be, but it just doesn't have the same type of steam that some of these other guys have in terms of, you know, them, you know, potentially landing those jobs. I mean, who do you guys think is the favorite?
We honestly have no – Tim, we have no idea, and that's just being honest. We've been talking about it for 3 days, and I'm not even sure – any of the candidates out there gets anybody excited. It's really, to me, it's going to be a wait and see, because there's nothing out there, I think, that's going to have people going, heck yeah, all right, let's go. This is going to get everybody, you know, people are going to buy tickets. I just don't see that happening until it plays out.
I agree with all of that, but I still think Vrabel makes the most sense to me. I said that earlier in the show. I'm even more convinced of it now, talking to Tim about it. But the key then would be, who are you turning the offense over to? But that can be done. But I am intrigued with the connection to Vrabel.
What if he's
go ahead.
No, I had a wise.
You're going to be
I
was going to be a smart butt.
Here's the other thing for Vrabel. I mean, like, I don't know. Let's just assume that Pat Shurmur's going to the Giants,
yep.
Which it appears that that's the case.
Patricia Detroit.
And you've got Josh McDaniels going to Indy. So you have Arizona and Tennessee open, right? Is that where we are now?
Yep.
So, you know, and then you just think about who the candidates are. I mean, I think you look at this situation, I think it makes a lot of sense for Mike Vrabel here. Like, I haven't Jim Schwartz lives in Nashville. He has, you know, he's had experience being here. I don't know anything about his name being in the mix, much like Brian Flores. Like, Brian Flores is a guy I know personally and know the opportunities to have. I remember Brian Flores' name here, and he's got New England ties.
Okay, what if Schwartz said he was bringing DeFilippo as his OC? Would that intrigue you?
No.
Okay.
And then listen, you know, like DeFilippo's name seems to get planted out there by a lot of different people, you know, who kind of, there seems to be a lot of different reporters that have DeFilippo's, you know, name at the top of their list. And I know he's interviewed for jobs. He is a guy I know personally. He was quality control at the Giants when I was there. You know, that one, I just be honest, like, that one surprises me. So, yeah, I don't know. Sometimes these things don't make a lot of sense. And like, to me, I don't know why Frank Reich isn't. I guess he's the other one that's been rumored a little bit, you know, down here. Frank Reich is another guy. Like, I'm surprised that he hasn't had more opportunity. I mean, he's coached a long time. In a bunch of different systems. I think you look at what's happened there in Philadelphia. You know, that to me has Frank Reich's fingerprints on it more than John DeFilippo's.
Okay. Tim, good stuff. Appreciate it as always. Have a great rest of your week.
All right. You guys do say, hey, stay safe. There's actually snow on the ground here.
Yes, we're going to travel very slowly.
Yeah. Well, I was actually surprised that you were on the air, you know.
Yeah, we're troopers. It's going to take a lot more than that to keep us off the air.
Are you remote from home?
Another inch, then we would have been in trouble.
Another inch? By the way, I wanted to bring this up. Did you guys see the FaceTime Chase got on SportsCenter this week?
I heard about it.
I didn't see it, but he's told us five times in an hour.
Big. See, listen, when you're tight, you know, I try to pull as many strings as I can, you know? Uh-huh.
Thank you, Tim.
You're tight like that. Yeah, so, you got a best friend.
So you're taking credit for his hit on SportsCenter, is what you're
saying. Well, listen, honestly, it's Chase. So I think if you want ratings spike, you put Chase on TV.
Okay.
So, like, I don't want to take full credit for it, because I think Chase deserves credit.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Wow. Ending on a very high note and kind of a love fest. So
that'll be a promo soon.
Thank you, Tim, as always.
See you guys.
Tim Hasselbeck. Brought to us every week by Penn Station East Coast Subs, locations in Mount Juliet, Hermitage, Bellevue, and two down in Murfreesboro.
All right, when we come back, we will get the Bovada odds on the next Tennessee Titans coach.
Come back and wrap up the third hour with that next. All right, let's get the odds. Good stuff from Tim Hasselbeck. What are the Bovada odds for the next Titans head coach?
All right, our buddy, Jimmy Shapiro, sports publicist, Bovada.
He does exist.
The propositions. Who will be the next coach of the Titans? There are seven names that they have placed odds for. Remember, we have no connection to these guys. They put it out there. They got a lot of stuff on here, but this, of course, has local intrigue. So who is the favorite? Darren?
Who is the favorite?
Who is the favorite? Who is the number one favorite, according to Bovada? Next head coach of the Titans. It is not James Franklin, who you brought up earlier. It is also not Lane Kiffin, who was brought up earlier by one of our callers. That was fun.
Mike Vrabel.
Mike Vrabel is the favorite, according to Bovada, at 3-1. Now, where they come up with this, I have no idea. This is just... But, you know, we're always wondering what people are thinking out in Vegas. They spend a lot of time on this stuff. They make a lot of money on this stuff. Mike Vrabel at 3-1.
Okay.
There are two coaches at 4-1. There are two at 5-1, and there are two others at 15-2. See if you can name these coaches.
Are they the ones we've been talking about? Just tell them. If it's Steve Wilks, Matt LaFleur...
Okay, but which ones
Frank
are where?
Reich,
yeah. It's a lot of these guys.
DeFilippo,
yeah.
Same guys.
They're sniffing. There's no wild card on here.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know. The group of 4-1s, I'll go LaFleur and Reich.
Matt LaFleur is 4-1. Frank Reich is 15-2.
Ooh, okay. DeFilippo is 4-1.
John DeFilippo is 4-1. So it's Vrabel at 3-1. DeFilippo, LaFleur, 4-1. You've named Frank Reich at 15-2. So you've got 2 5-1s and one other 15-2.
Steve Wilks.
Steve Wilks is 5-1.
And is there one more 5-1?
There's one more 5-1. There's one more 15-2.
I'm running out of names.
Well, there's one that we've been talking about a lot today, and there's one that we haven't been, but both have local ties.
Jim Schwartz.
Jim Schwartz is 15-2. There's one other guy with local ties, somewhat local ties, who's 5-1.
Somewhat local ties.
But we have not talked about him.
But we've not talked about him.
Yet he's 5-1 on this list. And maybe there's a reason he's 5-1 from afar. Because to be honest, we haven't really heard that he's in on this like some of the other names.
Just give it to me. I don't know.
Jim Bob Cooter.
Oh, okay.
5-1.
Okay.
In Vegas.
Really? Okay.
Vrabel 3-1. DeFilippo, Matt LaFleur 4-1. Jim Bob Cooter, Steve Wilks 5-1. Frank Reich, Jim Schwartz, 15-2.
Jim Bob Cooter is just sitting out there, right?
He's out there.
He's just out there to be had.
Coaching change is going on in Detroit. He's done, in a lot of people's minds, a pretty good job with the Lions.
What did you think about Brad Childress? It was interesting.
Brad Childress.
Tim was really harping on Brad Childress. Bring him in some capacity.
That would be in the name of a consultant, old pro offensive guru that could help create a philosophy. But
well,
he said maybe
Mike Munchak was doing that.
Bring him back as an offensive coordinator.
You know what Mike Munchak was doing? He was trying to do that as well on offense. Do you remember who it was?
Was it him that brought back Tom Moore?
Tom Moore.
I thought that was Mike Munchak that did that,
Mike,
right?
That's what, yeah. I said, Mike Munchak.
Yeah,
Tom Moore.
Sometimes when you say Mike Munchak, I'm still thinking Mike Mularkey. Yeah. But yes, Mike Munchak did bring in Tom Moore.
Same role, right? Same deal.
And then he did it with Dick LeBeau, and Dick LeBeau, or in fact, Ken Wisenhunt brought in Dick LeBeau, who ascended up, started as a consultant or a co-defensive coordinator, whatever the title was. The next thing you know, he was running it. A lot of ways that can go.
I don't think it's a horrible idea.
No, it's not a horrible idea. And I do like the concept of your head coach can be any background you want, offense or defense. Doesn't matter. The question is, who is the offensive coordinator? That might be just as important as who the head coach is in terms of what you're trying to do with the offense. Because, again, you've got the quarterback that you like. You don't feel like you've gotten the most out of him. And on top of that, you've invested a lot around him. First-round picks everywhere. Free agents, you've invested a lot more money on that side of the ball. Got to get more out of that unit.
We will kick off the fourth and final hour of Wednesday's edition of 3D with Terry Crisp. Yes, the Crispinator will join us at 1 o'clock. That's coming up next on 102.5 The Game.